Hello and welcome to the lunchtime after the night before. I'm Damien Wilde, editor of EG. So not for the first time, an election night didn't play out as expected. The capital did not turn a deep shade of red. Indeed, while Kensington and Chelsea, Wandsworth and Westminster all stayed blue, Barnet turned blue. Meanwhile, the Lib Dems took Richmond. Nevertheless, the climate is changing, and the established development public-private partnership model is looking tarnished, if not broken. Some of its best-known proponents, Sir Robin Wales in Newham, Claire Coburn in Haringey, have gone. So what next for development in London? I'm joined by a panel who will have a better idea than most. Dean Clifford is co-founder of central London residential developer Great Marlborough Estates. Ian Fletcher is director of policy at the British Property Federation. Paul Wellman is EG's own London residential analyst. And Martin Bellinger is executive chairman of housing developer and contractor Guildmore. So what did you all make of the results last night? Ian?
No great surprises, I suppose. From the industry's perspective, they like stability, and therefore we got that to some extent, I suppose.
But we were expecting instability, though, wasn't it surprising?
We were, and it'll be interesting, particularly with some of those new mayors, to see how that plays out. Obviously, we've lost some big political beasts in terms of people like Sir Robin Wales, who didn't even make it to the starting line, Steve Bullock and Lewisham, who have... being, I think, pragmatists in terms of their approach to investment and development. And so over the next few days, it'll be interesting to see how the new personalities play themselves out in terms of whether they're going to continue to be as supportive of investment in their local areas.
Martin, what did you make of it?
Well, first sight, it seems same old, but looking behind that a bit, I think actually there is some interest in the results. The as you said in your introduction, the promised painting London red didn't happen. Maybe that'll give us a bit more stability in the GLA area. There's been a bit of a reluctance that I've detected on the GLA interfering in planning matters, particularly in Labour boroughs over the last 12 months. And with people being given a new four-year mandate, hopefully that'll see some settlement in that area, and we'll get back to sensible decision making. Looking nationally, I think we probably, as you said, we were expecting disruption, but maybe we were all victims of the misinformation as well. I think if you stand back from it, you have to say that the Conservatives probably managed their information rather better, in that they managed to project a feeling that they were going to be slightly underwhelmed, and Labour were exhibiting these battle cries that they were going to do all these different things and have all these different victories, and they've probably fallen short. So for development, for housing, there are some interesting little cameos that come out of it. I was particularly interested in what happened down in Tandridge, which is a Leafy Lane council. And although the Conservatives hung on to it just, there was a big switch to independents and residents associations. And that was very definitely a reaction to the housing numbers that are forecast by the council in Tandridge, and the fact that they are planning a garden village to which there is widespread local objection. So maybe the macro policy might be re-examined after this.
Okay. And Paul, we spent much of yesterday talking about how we will be covering this morning, I think assuming that there was going to be a little bit more drama, notwithstanding the cameos that Martin mentioned there. Are there, when you looked at what happened this morning, what did you make of it?
I think anecdotally, a lot of developers and investors have been putting off their planning applications or even trying to push committees back until after these elections. Just looking at our data, there has been a lot of planning refusals in Q1 2018, up to 27% of planning applications going to committees and delegated in Q1 were refused. So I think we've talked about it before, uncertainty, a lot of people trying to get over that hump of local elections, but there's still a bit of uncertainty, I think, to what happens now. Like we said, we've got new mayors in Newham. I was speaking to a developer just yesterday, actually, who's looking to invest in Newham. And I asked that exact question. What do you think this new, slightly more left-leaning mayor What stance will they take? And I think that, well, they didn't know, essentially. So there's still a bit of uncertainty. How is this going to work out all in practice? And it is still a bit kind of looking forward and seeing how it goes, playing it by ear, as it were.
But the impact of these elections started nearer the beginning of this year for you.
Absolutely. And even to last year, in fact. We've had schemes like Delancey's Elephant and Castle. That was pushed back. Haringey as well. So still quite a bit of uncertainty. Although I think a lot of developers will be just glad to get over the elections and then almost kind of see where we go.
Okay, thank you. And Dean, as a central London developer, had you already paused as we went into the election season?
I think there was a general air of pause across the industry, certainly in development in London, and that was both, I think, from a developer's perspective, a considered choice, and also one which I think to some extent was put upon us by local authorities. I welcome the result, and I think most developers will welcome the result, because I think that what we always look for is stability. And I think that the election result does give local authorities that bit more confidence now, certainly members more confidence now, to drive forward and really push through now that they have firm mandates. The interesting thing is, I think has been previously said, that there wasn't the sort of Labour tidal wave that that everybody was expecting. And I think that... That's an interesting outcome. I think that there was that momentum did not have the momentum that everybody thought that they would have in the elections. And so, as I say, from a developer's perspective, it's very welcome, and hopefully we now have a calmer and more stable playing field in which we can all operate in.
Okay, even though there weren't many changes, certainly not to the left in terms of overall control of London Council, some of those people at the top are changing. Mm. In Newham, in Haringey as well. I think Haringey we won't know until next week. In Newham, it's going to be Roxanne Fiaz. So there are shifts, and there is perhaps evidence of momentum, as you put it.
I think that where there has been inevitable change, i.e. where we know in specific instances there has been change. But I think the interesting thing from yesterday's election is that actually that hasn't necessarily filtered through insofar as anything new. So I think that was it Labour being over optimistic, or was it actually electors, the electorate saying, actually, we want a period of calm. We don't actually want that much change. And that's where I think the local elections are probably a very good bellwether for where the country is at the moment. I think people want that stability across the country. They're not looking for significant change. And that's been reflected in the election results.
Okay, thank you. And Ian, the elections are only part of the story, really. It feels like there's been a direction of travel for at least some months, possibly longer. Paul talked about Elephant and Castle there, some of the political leadership changes we've touched upon, even court cases this week. It seems to be pushing in a direction where that development model feels like it needs to be reinvented.
And there's been other things as well in terms of London Mayor setting out his sort of stall in terms of his policies on estate regeneration, requiring votes and that sort of thing. It's I think well recognised in our organisation that we need to restate, I think, the case for regeneration. I don't agree with the London Mayor's policies. I think that almost makes it impossible to do estate regeneration. And I don't really draw that much, however, from the Haringey example. I think, I don't think the industry should be beating itself up over that. I think, that was a particular set of political circumstances. Everybody I've met who has met Claire Coburn, I didn't know well myself, has said, she was an absolutely excellent council leader, and you can't really afford to lose that sort of talent, I don't think, in local government. I wouldn't draw too much on that example, but clearly there is a move and a sentiment there that is against those sort of large regeneration projects, and we need to get out there and illustrate the benefits and ensure that is reversed.
And how do you do that?
I think We need to illustrate the, you know, the industry is excellent at illustrating the economic benefits of regeneration. I think we need to, you know, get a bit more into some of the social benefits that derived. I think we need to ensure that we're engaging at the earliest stages, and the best regeneration companies are very good at that, but it's not endemic across the industry, and try harder in that regard.
Okay, thank you. And Martin, I think probably going back 2 years now, we were at the same party conference dinner, a Labour Party conference dinner, where Claire Cober was there, Robin Wales were there, and there was a real fear in the room that that they or their colleagues, their peers, may be replaced by more left-leaning candidates. That's only come to pass partially, perhaps. I don't think their fears have been completely realised. But do you think that this is a halting of that direction of travel, or perhaps just a pausing?
That's difficult to say. Firstly, I will say that I did know Claire quite well, and not only was she an excellent council leader, as Ian said, but also the energy that she put behind things shouldn't be underestimated, and for that alone she'll be sorely missed. But to call it a pause or a halting, I think we probably, as we were sat in that room 2 years ago, we were possibly a little bit more fearful than we should have been about as a group about the way things were going to pan out. In the event yesterday, it's become clear that the red surge, whatever you want to call it, didn't happen in London. Yes, some people who've been on the stage for a very long time, Sir Robin, Steve Bullock in Lewisham, have departed. Some of those suddenly, in Steve Bullock's case, not so suddenly. He trailed his desire to go at least 2 years ago. And it is very interesting to see how things settle down in those local authorities concerned now that people have got a 4-year mandate. For my business, Guildmore, we're obviously watching Lewisham very closely. We have a number of schemes in Lewisham, and we own a number of properties in the borough. So it's a key borough for us, and we'll be very keen to see how policy and practice play out there. I think describing it as a pause or a halting is perhaps it's perhaps overstating things. For me, politics is always a bit of an ebb and flow, particularly at local level. And where there was talk of a sort of spring tide of the left-leaning side, I think possibly that we've overstated that. Certainly on the basis of these results, and maybe we can get back, as Dean said earlier, to pragmatic and stable decision making.
Okay, thank you. And Dean, in terms of how you think you'll be working with London local authorities going forward, has your approach changed in the last couple of years? Does it need to change?
I think at Great Marlborough, the approach that we've always taken is to try and work in collaboration with local authorities. So our approach certainly won't be changing. I think certainly what we have seen in our discussions with officers and members is there is a need for perhaps greater, closer working with the GLA as an organisation, which I think would certainly help developers.
Closer working between developers and the GLA or local authorities?
I think local authorities as well. I think that would be helpful. But certainly insofar as what we do, we really look to engage early on our projects, so that won't be changing.
Okay, and Paul, mention of the GLA there. It's also the halfway point in Sadiq Khan's mayoralty. Do you get the sense that he's going to hit his numbers?
Well, we're up to, 65,000 homes per annum now in the draft London plan. In short, no. They are making encouraging signs, though, especially around the kind of the small schemes, where there's now going to be, or hopefully, a presumption in favour of small schemes that are 25 units or less. that are within 800 metres of a railway or train station or a town centre boundary or within a PTAL rating of 3 to 6. So there's definitely encouragement from the GLA trying to get around those kind of planning issues that especially in the outer London boroughs where development activity is moving to due to affordability issues holding up, they are going to be really key in trying to push those kind of planning approvals up and therefore construction. So they're never going to get to 65,000. We are up to 28,000 private units starting last year for the third consecutive year. A lot of that is built to rent. More and more so is built to rent. But I think, yeah, a mix of tenures, an encouragement for small developers, smaller SMEs can only help. So, yeah, in short, no, but it's encouraging to see the movement in the right direction.
One thing I have moved against in terms of this election is, and I don't think we always appreciate in London how lucky we are, is having unitary authorities. Where I voted yesterday was a two-tier authority district and county, and the amount of misinformation that has been over the last couple of months in terms of who is responsible for what, and you know, when you're in there making your decision at the ballot box, I think you've got enough things to take account of without having to sort of think about, well, who's responsible for schools, who's responsible for roads, who's responsible for housing. I'm. I don't know if it's a BPF policy, certainly an Ian Fletcher policy going forward is more a fan of unitary than two-tier arrangements. So.
Okay, well, we may come back to that in another podcast. But just Ian, on Sadiq and the mayor, and Paul was suggesting, I think they're being explicit that he's not going to hit those targets, but suggesting perhaps a second half acceleration. Do you think there'll be a different approach from the mayor's office as the clock starts ticking on that London mayoral election now?
It's certainly, you know, going forward and some of the local elections are going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. When you look at some of the numbers that are coming through from both central government and local government that both London boroughs and the districts around them have to deliver, that is going to be extremely politically challenging. In my own district, I think there's 9,000 additional homes that's been accepted by the local authority. That means de-designating three bits of the green belt, and you can imagine how that's all going to play out at a local level. And to top it off, we've got housing minister as our local MP. He's going to be caught in some quite interesting political battles going forward at local level. It's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out at local level, both in London and the South East more generally.
And speaking of ministers and government, there's a new housing policy advisor in number 10 as well, Toby Lloyd, who appears to be, from some of his writings previously, cut from a different cloth to some of his predecessors.
So it was an interesting appointment in terms of the politics of it, but I suppose from my knowledge of Toby, he has always had an extremely thorough interest in things like new settlements, and obviously with the government looking at Oxford, Milton Keynes, Cambridge, potentially 5 new settlements coming out of that, number of other sort of garden villages being proposed across the country. I suppose Toby was perhaps an obvious choice to drive that sort of agenda forward.
Someone who's written that parts of the Greenbelt could be released, right to buy, could be extended to PRS tenants, and on affordable housing, he said the single most important thing we can do to build more affordable homes is lower the high cost of land. So quite interventionist.
Yes, and I'm sure not all of those policies will make it through the number 10 policy machine, let alone HM Treasury and its views on those sorts of matters. But I suppose, yeah, the good thing is that you've got somebody who's a thinker in there and is going to challenge and undoubtedly get pushback on some of the issues. But rather than that, what we've sometimes had over the last sort of 10 20 years, which is either ideas that have been crazy or at the other extreme, people that really haven't pushed housing's case within the wider government.
Okay, Martin, at the risk of labouring the point, no pun intended, actually, but with Toby Lloyd's appointment and some of the other things we've talked about, it does feel like a little bit of a turning point, and where developer attitudes and terms of engagement going forward may have to be very different to how they've been previously.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, we're talking about these elections yesterday, but for the development industry, actually, we've got to look through a much wider lens at the moment. We've got a new Secretary of State, unexpectedly, in the last week. We don't know much about Mr. Brokenshire. We know that he's got a good reputation from his activities at Northern Ireland before he had to leave government.
Local government is in his blood, he said,
yes,
hasn't he?
Not yes.
housing,
yes,
but
he
local
has.
Government.
And so that bodes well, but at the same time, there's the settling in period that goes with any new Secretary of State. We have still a relatively new housing minister who, since his appointment, has definitely not been as vocal as some of his predecessors on housing matters. So, and then we have new advisory instincts inside the Number 10 policy unit. So we have. We are, I think, you sum it up rightly, we're on the cusp of a bit of a change. I think as a development industry and a development church, we've got to be alive to that. We've got to be ready to respond to that. And I think we have got to think differently in many ways. Some of the old sacred cows no doubt will get slain as part of this process, and as Ian quite rightly suggests, some of this probably will get kicked into the long grass as it goes through other departments in government. But what is interesting is that there's a concentration on housing. It remains front and centre, both at the government level, the national level, and at the local government level. And I suppose as an industry, we should stand to gain from that, not necessarily financially, but operationally, and in a chance to get our point across at the policy level. So, interesting times.
Okay, interesting times. And Dean, we've talked about how some of those Labour local authorities may be changing, but I wonder whether you see changes in some of the Conservative, still Conservative local authorities like Westminster, where leader Nicky Aitken started taking a very different approach last summer and talked about standing up to developers more. It was certainly the beginning of the election campaign there, some months out. But do you think that will continue? Even in authorities that have stayed blue, they'll take a different approach to dealing with developers?
I think certainly what we're seeing in the London boroughs that we're active in is that actually, because there has been so much political change, certainly over the last 18 months, 2 years, that members are really listening to the local communities. I wouldn't necessarily say that there is a strong Conservative or Labour push through, but actually what we're seeing is that individual boroughs and the people that are living in them are feeling more empowered, and that is then filtering through to members and planning decisions. And I think as responsible developers, I think that actually should be welcomed, insofar as what we want to try and do is create appropriate spaces, that are in demand in those specific boroughs. So as I say, for us, it's not necessarily a party specific shift. I just think it's a general shift in politics that the politicians are actually listening to people, which can only be welcomed.
Okay, thank you. And Ian, we're almost out of time, but the politicians are listening to people, says Dean. Are the politicians listening to this industry anymore?
Yes, I think so. We had actually a session yesterday where we were looking at doing research into various stakeholders' views of our industry, and we filled a whiteboard with what we think people think of us. And
can you just describe some of the words on, or use some of the words that were on that whiteboard?
I think there are some big perceptions that you know need tackling. I don't. Yeah, you know, probably the biggest challenge I think for our industry is that people see the returns. They don't see the risks that people take on, and being able to articulate that better is something that I think the Federation and others in the industry need to do. But ultimately, gosh, I can remember. Chief Exec back now, Liz, coming in, and one of her first talks to the staff was to sort of say, we're not representing the tobacco industry here. There is essentially good in our industry in terms of what it does, in terms of delivering spaces and places that ultimately service the way that people want to live their lives in the UK. And so in that regard, we start with a good raw product. At a local level, actually, I think sometimes we're better understood because people see the benefits of what our sector does than sometimes at a national level.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we'll carry on with all of these topics. We will be carrying on next Tuesday after the bank holiday, where we have our London Residential Summit, and among the speakers is James Murray. So perhaps he'll give us a clearer view on what the second half of Sadiq's term looks like. But in the meantime, Dean, Ian, Paul and Martin, thank you very much.